Welcome back. You're listening to Time Smart Talk with Steve-O. News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM, WLOBradio.com. We have a very special guest, Mark Goering. He is the publisher of the Portland Phoenix. Welcome, Mark.
Welcome, Steve. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Most people are familiar here in Southern Maine. Portland Phoenix is a weekly. There's been a lot of transitions in the last few years in terms of weekly newspapers. We'll get to that. But before we do, why don't we talk a little bit about your background, how you ended up here in Maine, and then we'll talk about the paper.
Sure. Well, I live in New Hampshire. I'm a North Conway guy and a native New Hampshireite, and have spent a long time in journalism. Started in the paper business. You know, I was brought up in Berlin, New Hampshire. Worked in the paper mills. Drove a pulp truck. Mm-hmm. Got involved with photography, photojournalism. Got interested in writing. Kind of worked my way to Washington, D.C. Worked there in the mid-80s. And then got the bright idea of trying to start a newspaper. So we started a free daily in North Conway. And it's in 25 years later. We started a couple more in New Hampshire, which are successful. And then 6 years ago, we ventured into Maine and started the Portland Daily Sun, which is now defunct. And that was sort of we ran out of luck with the free daily concept with the Portland paper. And 6 months ago, we bought the Phoenix.
Interesting. Horse Feathers, ever go there for lunch?
Never heard of Horse Feathers.
They mustn't be an advertiser, right?
Yeah. No, they're an institution in North Conway.
Yeah, one of my favorite places to stop. Talk a little bit about the format of free weekly, and in the case of the Sun, free daily, journalism and publications of all types, whether they're daily newspapers or weekly magazines. The last 15, 20 years, everybody's been scrambling to find a format that works in kind of the new digital reality. So back when I grew up in Boston. And so the Boston Phoenix was the weekly. You know, you had the Globe and you had the Herald as the dailies. But if you wanted to find out about concerts, comedy shows, or anything, you always read the Boston Phoenix. They were free, and so it was obviously advertiser-driven. And talk a little bit about how you've seen all that evolve from an advertiser-driven business to now something where you have to have digital partners, you have to have some sort of digital presence, and where you see that going.
That's a big topic, as you know. And the reality is that print is probably dead. I guess the question is when, you know. But also you can look at commercial radio. When is, you know, how long are people going to listen to commercial radio and listen to advertising?
Another hour. The answer to that is they'll listen for at least another hour. Yeah, but everyone said that. I mean, you know, back when VCRs and back when digital movie and TV content came on, people were saying nobody will go to a movie theater. But so there's always been these changes, but some of the things have kind of hung on. There's people, and I don't know if they're all dying, but there are people that really like reading content with paper and the kind of the tactile experience. I like reading the newspaper. I like reading the Phoenix. I like reading Time Magazine or Esquire or GQ on the paper version. And do you think that ultimately the cost and the distribution cost of all that will just make it so prohibitive that everything will be digital?
It's a matter of when. I think there's a future in digital. I mean, it's sort of like when you look at TV, you know, when the big three network stations 30 years ago and cable came along. Well, the big three aren't the big three. They're still successful business models, but there's no way they'll ever be dominant like they were. And so for print, that's the sort of the same case. I mean, it's not going to be the mass media that it was. And certainly when you look at print, you have to sort of segregate that. One is sort of the bigger newspapers, the Press Herald, I mean, the Boston Globe. Those papers are in serious trouble. You know, the ones that, they're working on figuring it out. Nobody has the answer yet. And digital is obviously a big part of that. The ones that have a brighter immediate future are the smaller papers. And these are the community papers. And it depends how you define your community. A community can be a small geographical community. It can be a community that's small in terms of like the Phoenix, where it reaches a certain demographic. And an acquaintance of mine has a free daily in Palo Alto, which is sort of the high tech capital, one of the high tech capitals in the country. And he doesn't even have a website. And his motto is something like news you won't find online. And so that's really the key to print and to newspapers now is to have content that you can't find anyplace else. And which is why the bigger newspapers, the metro newspapers like the Herald and the Boston Globe really are struggling.
Interesting. We've got Mark Garang here. He is the publisher of the Portland Phoenix. And part of the problem is Shani in the other room and Emily, who are both Deb.
Younger than us?
Yeah. Well, Deb, you're not the problem because you're old like Mark and I.
Right.
So, yeah, Eisenhower administration, weren't
something
you?
Something like
Wasn't
that.
He a great president?
He was awesome.
Oh, he was something. But this young generation with Emily and Shani McShani, they, to a great extent, grew up in the digital age where they've had almost unlimited access to information from computers and from iPhones and iPads and buying content, whether it's news content or sports information or fashion, is really a hurdle, and it's really something that, for the most part, they haven't had to deal with a lot of, purchased content. And so is part of this a generational thing? Is part of this an evolving thing? And how do we get Emily and Shani willing to, pay for, either an online version of a paper, a daily paper, or is that, or have we lost Shani and Emily?
Well, I think certainly digital natives is the, we are in a generational change. And you're mentioning paying for content, and I think paying for content is a very difficult proposition. I think newspapers have put up paywalls, and I'm not in the pay-for-content business, so You're kind of talking to the wrong person on that score. When we started the free dailies in New Hampshire, one of the things I would say, and that was 25 years ago, so it was in the late 89, actually. And then when the internet came along functionally, like in the mid-90s or late 90s, I'd say, well, the free dailies were born internet ready because they were free and they were local. So the paid content model is a tough one. And we can see that even with cable TV. How many people? I don't even subscribe to cable TV anymore, because I can just get things through Hulu and, right. Netflix. And so, the paid model is a different situation.
We'll talk about a little bit your model. And it's 100% advertiser supported, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only real revenue source. So I'm looking through the current issue. So there are all kinds of categories. Typically, high indexing category are beer and restaurants and kind of entertainment sector, whether it's music or concert halls, jewelry. I noticed some other things. So how is that marketplace right now in terms of the paid marketplace in this model? I work in a marketing company, and many of our clients in the last 5 years have all swung, and I think they've swung too far into the idea where it has to be all digital, it has to be all social, and I think that's going to come back a little bit where the digital world is a supporting tactic and it's core to as a communication channel. But real things, real papers, real experiences, I think will always have a place. So talk a little bit about the pay environment for advertising, at least here in the Portland area with the Portland Phoenix.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, in general, there's just the sex appeal with digital, and it should be. But even that, as we know, is just changing. I mean, people talk, it used to be banner ads, now have less value because there's so many places to put your banner ads. I mean, retargeted ads, I looked at a dining room set last year, and every time I go to a website now, I get dining room sets that are pop up for retargeted ads, and I've already bought my dining room set. So this sort of,
Well, you may have been identified as a heavy user on the dining room set.
I was too much into dining room sets.
You were too much. You clicked through much, and before you know it, Bob himself will be visiting you, saying, "Hey, this is Bob from Bob's Furniture."
I don't want to tell him I'm looking for a couch. Then, so
well,
the there's sort of a utility. And I think it is sort of shaking out, and for print and Phoenix in particular, that there's a little bit of last man standing concept for sure. I mean, the print that's left is certainly in a better position than was years ago. I mean, there's fewer print publications around, and there'll be fewer as time goes on. It still has a very high utility, though. And one of the things I always say is that if you look at college campuses, most colleges still print a college paper. Now, how does that work? Now, why would they do that? You know, I mean, of all anybody who doesn't, you know, that if anybody's going to be the digital natives, it's obviously going to be college students. So why is that? Well, it has a high utility. I mean, you're sitting around, you're reading it. Why do billboards still work? I mean, newspapers, you could say, are basically mini billboards, you know, because it's really, as from an advertising point of view, it's all about getting eyeballs in front of your product, or at least getting in front of your message to get to your product.
Well, by the way, we've got Mark Guerin here. He is the publisher of the Portland Phoenix. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. Our listening audience, this will be on Saturday, is generally, Deb, you can support this, right? Because you work at the mothership.
Yes, I do.
Our listeners, all three of them, are typically between 70 and life support. So I just want to confirm.
Oh, man.
What?
You're awful.
No.
70, it's 65 in life support.
65, right. There's a demo break there that's critical.
Yes.
There's a critical demo break. Talk a little bit about your audience. Talk a little bit here in the Portland Phoenix, and we'll talk about some of the other, what's going on in publishing in the other areas you work in. But who's the target, and what's the demo of somebody who picks up a Portland Phoenix?
Well, the Phoenix, I mean, there's a tiny bit of background, and you mentioned this before the show, is that the Phoenix was owned by Stephen Mendich, and he's like a media icon in New England. He started, or he didn't start, but he bought the Boston Phoenix back in its heyday in the 70s and 80s.
It was a radio station,
yeah, radio
FNX
station.
That supported it and all that, yeah.
He had a lot. He was one, you know, back in the days, and we'll remember this, I don't know if you used those 900 numbers for personals, where you dial in and you'd pay.
Did I personally use
those? You know, I'm just asking, but.
No. Just, I know you're asking
you
for a
friend. You probably just heard about them.
But yes, I heard about them. No, I stuck totally on 800 numbers if it was free information, but I never went 900. Deb, you ever go 900?
No.
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 Shani's looking guilty. She may have gone 900.
So, Steve, you were married since you were like 12 then.
Yeah, well, I've been married. And I would add the prefix happily married because, yeah, otherwise the whole 900 number thing. And if one of those numbers were on my telephone bill, a mistake. You know, phone company used to make those mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never went to the 900.
No.
So that was a revenue source, right? That was a big thing,
well,
the 900 numbers.
And the legend about that is that it was Stephen Mendich of the Boston Phoenix that kind of started that program. And at one time in the 80s, he was the biggest single customer of AT&T.
Wow.
That's a lot of 900 numbers. None of which were yours.
No. Funny thing, and this has a completely separate subject here. When was the last time anyone called 411? Like, you're talking about the 80s and 900 numbers, and certainly that's a popular segment, but I would guess 411 was even more popular. You used to have to call it for everything.
Yeah,
you and it'd
did.
Be like, oh man, I got to find out about the movie or the restaurant. I got to call 411.
Yeah.
And there was an army of 411 operators out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's must be like three of them left. And you know, you can call 411 right now, and a person would answer probably like they were already asleep. Like, hey, what 411? Can I help you? And it'd be like, yeah, I'm looking for what's the number of Ricchettas?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they would go like, seriously. Seriously, dude, you're calling 411 for the
you
number.
You interrupted my coffee.
I was in an oxygen tank. I was somewhere, but
try calling a 900 number.
Do they still even exist? Is this something that you're going to bring to
Portland?
That's
what you were telling me before.
Is this a news flash for Portland? 900 numbers are coming.
Yeah,
to Portland?
We're going to reintroduce the 900 numbers for the people who are over 65 for your audience.
God,
that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, Geritol is a over-the-counter drug, or OTC brand. You don't have to. That's available, right?
It's a vitamin. Yeah.
Well, isn't it? Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, you can get discounts
on
that at Sam's.
You don't have it in your medicine cabinet.
Well, what kind of discount do you get at Sam's on that? You get a pretty good discount.
At least 10%.
Okay. Anyhow, back to Mark.
Anyway, so the demo of the Phoenix, and it's sort of in the paper. You know, the Phoenix brand died. The Boston Phoenix went out of business a couple of years ago. The Providence Phoenix shut down this summer, and it was just past its time. So the Portland Phoenix was really the last one in the Phoenix empire. And it had been sort of a little victim of benign neglect over the last few years. So its demo had shrunk. And so the demo now, I mean, typical alt weeklies, ALT weeklies, short for alternative weeklies, is a young demo. And we're trying to broaden that a little bit. So we're trying to go from like 25 to 26. I mean, actually, we're trying to go from like 25 to like 40, because I run into people who are 35 and 40, and they say, oh, yeah, I used to read The Phoenix. And I'm thinking, well, you mean you read it like in the 70s? Well, no, The Phoenix is only 15 years old. They weren't born yet. So the people who should be reading The Phoenix, we're trying to get them back in. And
so you've given up on Deb and I. You've made
done.
A personal appearance just to let us know. And you're going to take this issue with you when you leave, because we just Al Diamond. He bounced around. He's bounced around everywhere. Casco Bay Weekly, and boy, he wrote one of the nastiest columns about me. And again, I don't mean to personally vent.
Well, who else? I mean, you and who else?
Well, I was going to say me and who else, but you know, who else wrote nasty columns about me? And they're both long lists. Do you remember that a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I do.
You know, and I wrote. He wrote something. Please say hi to him for me.
Sure will.
And he is, I actually really, you know, I was a fan of Hunter S. Thompson, or known as Doctor to his friends. And so I liked the gonzo kind of out there alt. You know, he was in Rolling Stone, but he would write some really interesting stuff. Fear and Loathing, I still think, is, it should be a life manual. For me.
Fear and Loathing?
In Las Vegas? And then there was on the campaign trail? You've never read that?
No. I'll put it on my list.
Well, if you've never read that, you can't even participate in this discussion. Shut that mic off, Deb. Come on. So, well, Fear and Loathing. And Al wrote, he writes in this kind of this, he's now this grumpy old guy. He's got to be, what, 100? So he's really, he would be like Deb's grandfather. So I ran for office, and he wrote this mean, really spirited thing. And then I think I probably wrote something mean spirited back to him. And then he wrote, and I copied the editor at the time a couple of years ago. And then he wrote something back like, you know, oh, so you went over my head to the editor. Now I'm going to get you. And he's written some really things, interesting things.
Yeah.
But I love the guy because I like his writing style. And if he's picking on other people, fantastic, good reading. But when he picks on you, it's like, so
Al's a great guy. I mean, I've had my run-ins with Al too. I mean, everybody does.
Has he ever written a bad column about you? He can't, because now he writes for you, right?
Well, that doesn't stop him. That wouldn't stop him. But he certainly, when he had his media column was in the Bollard, and he's actually given that up.
That's right.
And basically, the story is not from Al, but the story is that he gave it up because he gets so much grief from the media column. Way more than the political column, because, you know, media types, they're just a sensitive bunch, including myself, because every time he'd write something about me, I'd always fire off something. Al, that's not exactly right.
I feel the same way. We're probably both calibrated very similarly in terms of sensitivity. Deb, you can validate that.
I can, certainly,
really,
yes.
A bunch of babies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't want to divert on the Al thing, but so he's a guy who is like way outside of the demo, but he's also, I think, one of the better writers here in Southern Maine.
He really is, and he's a great writer. And the fact that he's actually kind of like got this libertarian streak, it's kind of, I mean, he doesn't traditionally fit into the Phoenix, but everybody knows him as Al. I mean, everybody knows Al in Maine, so he's just a great columnist. But the fact that he's libertarian, he's sort of like almost swinging around to the new demo.
And he lives up in a mountain or Hernia Hill or somewhere in has anyone seen him in Alaska? Is he still alive?
As an avatar, every once in a while he'll send down a hologram.
Is there a chance that he may, I mean, I don't want to wish any ill will, but do you verify that he's still around? Or maybe like he's on some sort of autopilot where he submits articles and dusts them off, and he's been, that would almost be like a movie premise.
Well, we did a piece on Hunter S. Thompson, speaking to your buddy Hunter S. Thompson, and my partner. I have a partner in town, Curtis Robinson, and he wrote the piece, and he lived with Hunter out in Aspen.
Wow.
And remember a movie a couple of years ago called The Jamaica Rum, something
was
like that?
Johnny Depp. Yeah, sure.
And so Curtis was part of that, because Hunter S. Thompson wrote that. It was an autobiography he wrote like 40 years ago, and he was a Caribbean drunk, and it was like a 1,000-page tome, and my partner Curtis was one of the editors that kind of trimmed that down for the movie.
I think he was with the Air Force or Army, and he wrote some sort of military thing, and then that got him into kind of the gonzo writing. And I think in the 70s, there was some acid involved, maybe
probably.
In the 60s. And the other book you need to add, Deb, if you're on kind of a literary bender,
sure.
is Hell's Angels.
Oh.
And,
oh, yeah.
And Hunter S. was embedded. And it wasn't a love story. It was kind of a gritty tale talking about the Hell's Angels out in Northern California.
Yeah, the gonzo journalism. And it scared every high schooler. I know I read it when I was in high school. And I was like, I want to either join the Hell's Angels or the Army, one of the two.
How about Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance with Piercy? Did you read that?
Yeah.
All that stuff. Ken Kesey, Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. That was, you know.
What about the Earth? Wow. What was the Earth catalog?
Yeah, the whole Earth catalog. Yeah.
Those are the days.
Yeah, those were the, you know, I didn't pass any classes at Needham High, but I read like every, you know, Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman. It was like, the name of the book was Steal This Book. And nobody ever made money off it because everyone, it was a call to action. It was this anti-establishment thing saying, and in it was all kinds of kind of manifesto on how to steal things, how to do bad things, how to lead your own personal revolution. And a lot of copies were printed. Very few were sold.
Wow.
Very little. It was a tough revenue model. We've got Mark Garang here. Talk a little bit about, and he's publisher of the Portland Phoenix. In the last few years, there's been some evolution. I mentioned Casco Bay Weekly. When I moved here 14 years ago, that was kind of the cornerstone as an alt weekly in terms of that's where music and entertainment was. And then over the last few years, between both the Portland Phoenix and its prior kind of configuration, that existed for years as it does now. You know, by the way, if any of those 70-year-old listeners want to go to the website, portlandphoenix.com, Deb, put that in your browser.
You bet.
And then a couple of years ago, while ownership changes were maybe in flux a little bit with the Phoenix before you came on board, Mark, this thing called The Dig popped up. And then over the last few months, I won't get into the specific details, but you know, there was an overlap, there was competition, some writers joined you, some people went to The Dig, and then ultimately I think you came to a business agreement where you purchased the assets or the name, and now you guys are the last person standing. Was that because only one weekly, the market, as far as advertisers, can only really support one weekly, and what were some of the highlights from that kind of media battle that kind of played out?
That was probably like the last newspaper war in the history of the United States, as short-lived as that was. And
I don't know if war. I don't know if it would be like
skirmish.
Globe Herald would be a war. Wall Street, you know, the Time and
Peace Shooters.
Time and Newsweek had a war for a while, and Newsweek lost.
But feeling diminished here, Steve.
Well, I'm not trying to diminish you. I'm just trying to say war is. I think it was.
It was in our heads that we were fighting.
Well, there were letters back and forth, and
it was an unfortunate thing. Is it was actually unfortunate because The Dig, what you're referring to is there's an alt weekly in Boston called Dig Boston, and that's been there for 15 years, and it sort of took the place of the old Boston Phoenix, and it's a little bit of a convoluted story, but basically they thought that the Phoenix was going to stop publishing, so they moved to Portland and start Dig Portland.
Because nature abhors a vacuum.
It does.
And they thought since the Boston Phoenix was getting wobbly that the whole empire was going to get wobbly.
Well, it did. And they helped put the Boston Phoenix out of business. They take credit for that down in Boston. And the connection is Mark Shepard, who was the general manager of the Phoenix here for years and years and years, is also the associate publisher, I think that's his title, at Dig Boston.
Right.
So it all kind of made sense. Now, the irony is that, what happened was, it's sort of like how World War I started, where all these things got in place and then nobody could back out, is that, and I've spoken to both Mark and Jeff Lawrence, who's the owner of Dig Boston, since then, and if neither of us would have started, if we would have known the other person would have started first. So in other words, if Dig Portland had started 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks before I bought the Phoenix, I probably wouldn't have bought the Phoenix. And vice versa, if they would have known that I was buying the Phoenix then they wouldn't have started Dig Portland, because we both know is that it can't support the Portland can't support two alternative weeklies.
That's where the comparison of World War One comes in,
kind of.
Because I've got to warn you, many of our listeners were very much involved in World War One. So if if there's going to be a challenge, it's going to come from our listener base, isn't
it? Of course.
Yeah. Yes. So it was a communication thing. You guys were communicating in code with like the Enigma machine, which was of course from World War II. The big war, and
Turling machine.
Yeah, yeah. What a great movie, huh? And that guy Cumberbum or whatever.
Cumberbatch.
Whatever his name is.
Cumberbitch.
Very, very, very. I don't know if that's the official name. I don't even know if that word has ever been used on WLOB. But anyhow, so there was a skirmish. It was a media titan skirmish. It involved, you know, small market Portland and then Boston, and there was a Dig thing, and then Phoenix, and you were keeping the brand alive here, and then ended up you squashed them like a bug.
Squashing like a bug is not. I wouldn't say.
We'll go back to the war analogy. There was warfare followed by a surrender, followed by some dispute on how you were treating. You know, the writers, and some writers left the Phoenix to go there.
Well, it wasn't some writers. 90% of the writers.
So like that had to be awkward when you bought them and you're like, hey, welcome back. And some people probably didn't come back because of whatever
reasons. Well, it was, and it's sort of like we're kind of joking about all that, but it was pretty serious stuff. And these were people's personal, professional lives. And anybody who involved as the writers and the contributors, they were really, there was no bad guys in this. There really weren't any bad guys. They were just looking after themselves and doing what they thought was right. And everybody thought the Phoenix was going under. So they were just jumping ship to a new entity. So I actually have, there's no malice involved here. Having said that, when we walked in the office in the first day, we walked into a bunch of computers and desks, and there was like, fortunately, there were two salespeople who were with us now who stayed and a couple of contributors, but everybody else went. And since then, people are coming back. And we encouraged them to come back. I mean, there's no malice towards anybody personally.
Interesting. We've got Mark Grain here. He's publisher of the Portland Phoenix. Let's shift a little bit broader. You've been involved with journalism, with daily papers and weekly papers. Talk a little bit about where you see journalism going, because, again, I get back to blaming Emily and Shanny McShanny, because there's a whole generation, I fear, that because of the way media has changed and the landscape has changed, there are no real firm anchor points of real journalism, real facts, real reporting, and it all becomes a blur. It's a blog, it's a post, it's a story in the Press Herald, it's something in the Phoenix. But information is important. And when you're publishing entertainment, music reviews, it's not life or death. But when you're talking about social issues and political issues and policy issues, which you touched on a little bit in the Phoenix, those are important things. But when all writing and all commentary is kind of thrown against the wall and a whole generation basically turns on their iPhone and it kind of flashes between, you know, and Facebook links and Twitter stuff, there's a generation, I fear, that just don't recognize. They don't have the anchor of 60 Minutes and Morley and Mike Wallace saying, hey, this is what's going on in the Panama Canal. And you go, man, if Mike Wallace says we have a problem with the Panama Canal because of trade payments or something, it's serious. There's a generation that's disconnected from facts and information, and now it's all opinion, and now it's all, of course, climate change isn't real because some weird, whacked-out scientist said it wasn't. And is it woe is the Republic, or do you think we'll swing back where people recognize journalism and real reporting as being valuable?
Well, I'm a little more optimistic. I mean, some of your readers remember back in the 1880s. I mean, some of your readers.
Right. Yeah, listeners. Yeah, they may think they're reading right now.
Right.
This may represent voices in their heads.
So, you know, so those days, I mean, there's only been a sweet spot of journalism for like 30 years. I mean, you go back to literally the 1880s and the turn of the century, every newspaper at that time, they're only newspapers, they were totally partisan.
Right.
So, So compared to that, are we worse off? I don't think so. And then you get into the 40s and 50s and 60s where everybody just, I mean, 1940s and 50s and 60s, where all the journalists and media just kind of towed the line. So I'm not sure, as much as we all love Walter Cronkite, which I'm sure your listeners still listen to tapes to.
Uncle Walt.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that's the best way to consume news either, by one voice, and a voice that's very filtered. So, yeah. So did we have a sweet spot? And even then, did we have a sweet spot in the 60s and 70s with Watergate and all that? That's probably the high point in journalism.
There was a cable channel. It's a mythical thing called CNN, where they actually did news pretty well. Somewhere in the 80s, I think they had a news operation. They were credible, and it was run by this swashbuckler guy named Ted. And when CNN, if something happened, a bad thing, an earthquake, a war, you go, man, I got to check with CNN. And now they've kind of lost their mojo, probably.
I guess. I mean, I think the good news internet, the good news about journalism, it has the internet, and the bad news about journalism, it has the internet. I mean, reporters are 10 times better reporters thanks to the internet. So right. It cuts both sides. And I think more information is better. I think people can find the information they want, and it's available. And so on the balance, I think it's the greatest thing.
But if the information is there, but the context for the consumer of the information, whether it's the reader, the listener, the viewer, they're not tuned, or they're not trained, or they're not interested. Part of it's apathy. My fear is that there is such, it's like people are consuming information from a fire hydrant of sources. So there's all these sources of, and it all blurs together, whether it's in a political realm, an entertainment realm, having to do with education. And it's hard for the average consumer of that information to decipher what really is credible. And in the absence of that, you have these camps of polarized views on this is good, this is bad. Bill Belichick deflated the balls himself. This happened with Tom. On every part of the, maybe am I the grumpy old guy in the room?
Am I really?
You and Al.
Me and Al. Maybe Al and I would get along. Do you ever talk to him? Please tell him I said hi.
I will.
Please tell him. I don't know if he does hugs, but please tell him in the spirit of, wanting to make sure he's all right. But I worry about that. I worry about civics. I worry about kids in school not being taught about civics. I'm worried about 96% of the kids in Maine graduating high school couldn't tell you the difference between a referendum and a refrigerator. I worry about those things in the entertainment business, in the financial market, like the stock market, the fundamentals of, our economy and the Fed. Most people just kind of go, yeah, I'm not really into that. It's, one of the big issues here in Portland was that little sliver of land by the Eastland Hotel. There was protest about that. And I think it's like a quarter acre, an eighth or an acre.
Yeah,
a little tiny park. And I don't know all the details, but the Westin who bought the Eastland, they spent millions of dollars redoing it. They offered, $400,000 or $500,000 to buy the sliver, and they were going to do something with it. And then it organized and it enraged this small group of activists saying, don't take away our park. And meanwhile, the city and the state is dealing with all these economic hurdles where, we need to pay for stuff. And I worry. I worry about the kids. And I know when I was in the 60s, my grandparents were like, oh, Steve watched the Beatles the other night. He's got to be going to hell. Oh, speaking of the Beatles, did you follow the Beatles?
I mean,
we're a similar generation. Do you know what? I've had this epiphany in the last year or two. And my epiphany is I was always in the kind of the John Paul camp, as those guys were talented. Ringo was just lucky to get it. He had a cool name, Ringo Starr, we need him. George Harrison was kind of, George Harrison was an enormous talent of his own. And he never quite got the credit up until the last kind of 5 years after he died, where George Harrison was the real deal.
And he was a clear thinker, too, and he went in 67, he went to San Francisco to experience a summer of love. He says, what's going on here? Everybody's just smoking pot.
Yeah, he went to Indy, and he got involved with the Yashirami, or who did he get involved with? Somebody?
Some guru.
Well, it's close enough.
Well, it's like Cumberbuck, or whatever the guy's name is. But he went, and he was open to ideas and thinking, and he collaborated with people, and he would play music with Tom Petty, he would do the Traveling Wilburys, he would play with Clapton. And weren't Clapton and him married to the same woman?
Was it they did. Somebody took somebody's wife, I think.
And I think later returned the wife, which is always the polite thing to do.
Yes, it is.
It is always the right thing to do.
So are you a Paul McCartney guy or a John Lennon guy? Ginger or Marianne?
Oh, I've got to tell him, geez, you're going to go Gilligan's Island. We're going to divert right there. But seeing McCartney run around and do backup gigs and do, to try to appeal to a new generation, I don't know what the deal is.
I saw him, I fulfilled one of my baby boomer bucket list things by going to see him I saw him at Boston at Fenway last summer. And Paul McCartney, I thought he was great.
Really?
Yeah, he was really good. I mean, the fact that he can, seeing Who, which I didn't see, but I saw the Super Bowl show, and they can't hit those high notes anymore. But Paul McCartney, he's just still got it. I mean, like, why not? Like, why wouldn't he want to do that? And he's a showman.
Well, he's a showman.
Would you retire Frank Sinatra?
Old Blue Eyes?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do. How about Tony Bennett? They still wind him up and push him out.
And he's dead already, and he still does it.
Is he dead?
I think so.
But he sounds good.
I know, it's amazing.
Take him off our listener list, because we've been counting him. We're going to have to change the rate card. If this is new information coming from Mark, we're going to have to.
I hate to break it to you, Steve, but
obviously I keep my finger right on the pulse.
Yeah.
Right on here at WLOB, News Talk, 1310 AM. We get all the information, don't we, Deb?
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we're going to have the next Phoenix is going to be exciting because we have we're having an art cover contest, and so the winner of the art cover contest is named Mondo Parmesan.
Really?
He's a local guy, Mondo Parmesan.
Not Parmesan like the chicken dish, which is delicious.
Yeah, yeah, and he's got a brother named Larry Cheeseburger. It's amazing.
Well, Portland is a foodie town.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want to integrate food? Yeah. And so what was the art contest about? You do something with Mecca. Mecca's great.
Yeah, Mecca's great. We just did an art contest for, we're trying to, live big. So we did an art contest, and we had a number of artists submit art. And so we had a little panel, and we chose a winner. And so that's going to be the next week's cover art. So we're kind of excited about that.
Speaking of cover art, and I'm a little bit reluctant to say this, and Deb knows how I don't like to kind of personally inject myself in interviews. It's not what the listeners want.
It's not you, Steve.
When we met with both of them, they said, no, that's not what they want. But how does somebody get on the cover of the Portland Phoenix? Because like the song, cover of the Rolling Stone,
right?
For many, many years. And again, I don't want to pander. We've got Mark Garang here. He's the publisher of the Portland Phoenix. First of all, you have the power to make that happen, right? Even though, you have an editor and
absolutely.
At the end of the day, if Mark comes in and says,
iron fist,
we're putting Steve-O on the cover.
Right.
He's a multi-position threat. He has a radio show, 50,000 watts?
Oh, at least.
It's got a lot of watts.
Yes.
We've got wattage. The tower is covered in snow. And so the watts aren't going anywhere.
Right.
But we have the capacity.
Not till spring.
Yeah, right. We have a transmitter, and it makes these crazy noises like a blender where you put rocks in it or something. But but the point is, radio show, weekly column in the Forecaster, which if the price is right, we'll talk later.
Yeah. That's called payola in radio, right?
Oh, back in the day when payola was, it's called commercial integration now. I think it's called some sort of synergy thing. But anyhow, so radio, newspaper, marketing companies. I'm a CDL Class A driver, former sports agent, co-owner of the Red Claws, minority owner. I own like four basketballs.
Which position do you play?
I sit there. I'm lucky they let me in. But in truth be told, it really is. I own four basketballs, three pairs of gym shorts, and one little section of the concession stand.
Do your listeners know what you look like?
I hope not.
Because I think you'd be good at center.
I hope they don't know what I look like. Jesus. Because
yes, they do.
How do they know?
Because your picture is on the website.
Well, that, and we've met both of them.
Yes.
So now you're being just kind. But yeah, so if you're ever looking, And again, this could raise the target demo, which is now 25 to 26.
Right.
Very, very narrow, very focused. You've got like a laser focus. You could raise it a little bit. I could bring up the mean average.
We could put the triple digit demo in?
Yeah, we could put in before you know it. And it may, who knows? Because, oh, you want to hear something really funny? Speaking
sure.
about trickle, I shouldn't even mention this. Why would
no,
I even mention
do it?
This? Okay, I'm going to mention this. We just did a program. I'm not going to mention for which client. I'm not going to do it, Deb. You're not even going to make
I'm
me
not
because I love our
yeah.
clients here.
Okay.
We did a program down in Florida at a place called The Villages. And The Villages is a community. They've got two zip codes. And there's about 120,000 people who live in The Villages down in Florida. And so we did this marketing program. Great, great place, great residents. But one of the directors of The Villages came to us before and said, yeah, the biggest issue we have at The Villages, and this is all 100% retirement, true story. So people like your age and above, Deb.
Okay.
People like, you know, so it's like 60-something to
sure.
to whatever. Triple
to death.
To triple death. Well, death sounds harsh.
Well, that's usually because it is.
Well, yeah. No, it can. It doesn't have to be harsh. I mean, it's something we're all going to face. So we got to. But I don't want to get too existential here because then we're going to start talking about Camus, another one of my favorite authors. But anyhow, down at The Villages, they came to us and they said, yeah, the biggest problem we have with our residents, 120,000 residents, STDs.
What?
Honest to God. So you've got 120,000 seniors that are retired. They've got a combination of plenty of time on their hands, right? And then happy hour starts at 2 or 3. Sometimes Wednesdays it starts at 1.
Man.
Happy hour starts at 1. And you just have all these older residents hanging out.
Wow.
And you have a closed universe. I once went to Anchorage, Alaska. I think I was with either Willie Nelson or Earl Thomas Conley. I used to be in music. I lived in Beaumont, Texas. Lived with David Allen Coe in a double-wide trailer. That's
wow.
another reason I should be on this thing. But so you get off the plane in Anchorage, and that's the first thing the mayor said to us. It was like Willie or Tom. Colin. So it was and I was the road manager. And you get there and he goes, hey, boys, you know, I got to tell you something. We've got a lot of VD up here. Yeah.
Wow.
And apparently
welcome
a lot of friendly people. A lot of friendly people.
So how go back to The Villages? So they,
yeah.
had they have their happy hour at 2 o'clock, and then it's sort of like sex on a golf course?
I think it's sex anywhere. Again, I don't want to go too far with the visual, but...
it's just sex.
I don't know. And at some point, when you get to be in the 70s and 80s, which, you know, I'm knocking on the door, but when you get to that, maybe it's a whole different experience. Maybe it's, I don't know, like animals in the wild, where you just kind of look, and you know how nonverbal communication works?
Hmm.
You're at the bingo parlor. You've just got four in a row. Somebody's really impressed. They look over and go,
That's good enough.
That's it. It used to be, when I grew up in Boston, you have to go to Kenmore Square, and you got to go to Father's First and get nickel beer, and then you have to go dancing, and then you got to do it. There's all kinds of hurdles. Maybe when you get to be in that age group, you just kind of, you play bingo. It's 4 o'clock. You know you're only going to be awake for another hour. and then you just look across, you just go, and that's what happens.
Are you describing my life right now?
Is there anything you want to confess here, Mark? Is there anything because...
Is this scaring me?
I was going to say, you know, you could confess anything. And again, neither of our listeners are probably... So, but yeah, maybe the whole thing changes. Right, Deb?
I don't know anything about it, and I'm glad.
Somehow we started with 900 numbers with Mark, and then we moved into
cover art.
Yeah, one other
thing. Steve and a cover.
How much of I don't want to have like any kind of like revenue disclosure here.
Sure.
But it seems like with alternate weeklies, the history has been whether it's the 900 numbers or the ads in the back, you know, for Dating Made Easy, and there's a girl there, and then there's another ad for warning hot guys, and then there's apparently a dance facility here in Portland that has some sort of tiki thing going.
Yeah.
How much of that genre of kind of entertainment is critical to the weekly versus like music or movies or other stuff?
It's so, not. The adult section, as we like to say.
That's the category?
Yeah, the adult section.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, the adult section was huge in alt weeklies forever. Right. In the way that classified sections were for, I mean, that's the adult section paid the bills for alt weeklies in the way that classifieds paid the bills for regular daily newspapers. So that's gone. So the challenge for us, and so the short answer is for the Phoenix in any alt weekly, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, we happen to have a few, and PT's is a, you know, it's a local spot. It's a, you know, it's Portland Strip Club. Everybody knows it. And
Deb?
What?
Amateur night, Steve.
Oh.
Deb?
Don't you be looking at me.
Well, I'm not looking.
I'm not going to PT's.
Actually, that's right near HQ, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Right near the mothership.
Right, the WLOB mothership is right behind there.
How handy.
I know. I don't know if you've ever been there. But one time they were advertising donuts in the morning. And
I didn't go. Oh, you
missed
it.
But that was a whole new category. It was some marketing whiz there was like, hey, we're going to open up a whole new day part with like donuts in the morning.
There you go.
Yeah, but that whole industry, you know, the internet.
Can I tell you a little bit of an off-color PT's joke?
Boy, we're going to put the. Do we have a 7-second delay here? Or maybe like a 70-second? Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I'm on a. You know what a four-legged sales call is? You know that stuff. So I'm accompanying my sales rep to PT's to see Gary, who's the manager. He's a great guy. And so we just go as an intro. And so we walk in, and it's dark. Have you been, you know what PT's is like?
Shaking my head, no, but go ahead.
I'll paint the picture.
He can imagine.
Deb knows what PT's is like.
Oh, gee. Shh.
It's very dark. It's very dark. And we went at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's dark, like dark. You have to walk down a long, dark hallway. Over on the side, you can see a floor, maybe a couple of guys hanging out, you know, drinking a beer and a dancer. And so we're going up to Gary's office upstairs. So we're led through the office. You know, it's like wearing, you know, Florida sunglasses. And so we have our meeting with Gary. And on the way out, he says, so can you find your way out? And we said, yeah. And he says, okay, just be careful. Don't run into anything soft or hard.
Okay, that was good.
You know, if we had...
I thought that was pretty funny.
If we had an FCC license, which I'm still not sure, I'm not sure WLOB has one, I don't know if it would be at risk then.
No, that was okay.
Do we even have an FCC license?
Of course we have an FCC license.
Does the FCC even know that we're on the air?
Of course they do.
They do?
Yes.
They check 1310 and they go, hey, is there still a signal?
Yes. They do.
Really? It's not like a Seinfeld episode where it's like a radio station, nobody knows
you. No, nobody hears it.
That's amazing. Wow. We have Mark Garang here. He is the publisher of the Portland Phoenix, local weekly entertainment, music, kind of lifestyle guide. In our last few minutes here, and again, we've covered a lot of area here. We've gone from North Conway. We've gone to World War One. Which was analogous to the Big Dig conflict, and local entertainment options. But you live in New Hampshire, and how often do you get up to Maine?
A lot.
A lot?
Yeah. I mean, it's a short commute.
Yeah. Which do you like better?
Maine or New Hampshire?
Yeah.
We have a better motto.
Yeah. But what about the whole live free and die?
Yeah, That's it. That's the reason to live in New Hampshire.
Really? You've got like 13 miles of coastline, and you have like these three metro areas where so there's the whole no tax thing. Of course, you get density, you have efficiency. We've got 35,812 square miles in Maine. It's hard. We've got so much space.
Yeah, but you're all in one spot.
Oh, I wish we were all in one spot. We've got 1.3 million and 488 municipalities.
And a lot of roads to plow.
Oh, every mile. Deb, you've heard this rant before.
I have. I agree with
you. Every mile you put between people and goods and services, you add inefficiency. Mm-hmm. You know.
So are you suggesting everybody move to Portland, the Republic of Portland?
No, we need better density.
I mean, you have two states.
No, there's no. You mean above the Big Indian and below the Big Indian?
Kind of.
The Indian? Again, nobody ever explained to me. That's in Freeport. Have you ever seen the Big Indian?
Of course I have.
What's the history of the Big Indian?
I don't know the history of it.
That's the problem. people have assumed for decades, well, there's got to be a reason. There's a big right there on, you know, Route 1 of Freeport. Of course, it's a tribute to an indigenous tribe. I know. I made that up.
No.
Somebody's going to research this.
Oh, okay, and we will.
It was probably some souvenir shop or something, and you're like, of course I know that fact. That's in every history book.
How big is the state of Maine compared to the rest of the states in the Union?
The other five New England states can fit in Maine.
Right. But
so Maine, where does it rank?
Ask the average person how big they think. In New England, ask the average person. Deb, how big do you think Maine is geographically in size compared to the rest of the states in the Union?
It's not as big. It's not very big. I mean, you've got all the western states that are huge. Look at Texas.
But you're not you're too smart.
Oh, thank you.
Well,
most people will say,
if I had a nickel for every time that's what I'm saying, I'd be rich. Of course, Deb is the brains. I'm the looks in this operation. I've got the looks. But your point was Maine is
Maine's big. I mean, everybody thinks in New England is we're very New England-centric people. Yeah. So if you ask the average person, they'll say like, oh, it's probably like the 10th biggest state.
Yeah.
It's like 33rd. Like almost every state in the Union is bigger than Maine.
Yeah, but Montana has like, you know, two cities in Utah and Texas. Boy, Texas
they
is a
have
crazy
roads.
Place. They have roads too. Texas.
They don't have budget problems.
No, they've got different. The problem is Maine was one of the first states that were settled. And so nobody knew about planes, trains, automobiles, fiber optics. And so we organized the state 200 years ago based on what we knew. Like you, me, Deb. Couple other people, we'd go, you know, 100 miles out west. You'd have horses. I'd do farming. Somebody would teach in the schoolhouse. But then when you start working in a global economy or the industrial economy, the whole thing has been really challenging. And nobody wants to address it. But that's a big political discussion. Yeah. If I could get Al Diamond to come in, because he loves the political stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he's grumpy.
Yeah.
And he's, like, angry.
Yeah.
And
the perfect guest.
Can we get him on? Let's get him on, Deb.
Sure.
Yeah.
You have to find him. Let me know where you do.
Hernia Hill.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this has been fascinating. Any other than the big art breaking news that you gave us, anything else in the next few weeks or months that with warmer weather, there's more entertainment, there's more outdoor concerts. Is there anything else that our listeners can look forward to from the Portland Phoenix?
Oh, wow. So thanks for the opportunity for a plug.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the core of the Phoenix is really about arts and entertainment and culture. I mean, people want to know, like, what do you do? So we're trying to expand that. At the same time, I'm a news guy, so we're actually doing more news. So we did the USM story today, and we have these Just In columns. We did, you know, so you're going to see more news, but the heart of it will still be the culture side. And we're going to make some changes. The printing, we're going to change the format a little bit and tighten that up and grow. You know, we've increased the circulation like by 3,000 over the last couple of weeks. We have a better distribution network. It used to go, you know, all the way up to Lewiston, actually, and that's been truncated. So that's probably not going to happen in the next few weeks or a few months, but we are going to try to grow it and really make it more, you know, the alt-weekly is sort of a little bit of a dated term. We'd like to call it more like an urban newspaper or a city newspaper, so it's a little broader. I think there is room for another voice in town, political voice. And I don't mean it's either right, left, or whatever, but we'd like to think ourselves as progressive.
Sure.
And so, yeah, those are the kind of things we're heading for.
Well, I hope you come back sometime. Bring Al. Boy, that would be a hoot.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Steve.
We've had Mark Guerin here, publisher of the Portland Phoenix. If you go to portlandphoenix.com, you can read all about it. And they're also available as a free weekly wherever you get your free weekly. You're listening to Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We'll be back.